Get ready to take off with Dynamic Golf. Hey, welcome back, Dynamic Podcast listeners. Welcome. I am your co-host, Tim McElvanna, and with me, as always, is our co-host, Sean Klotz. Sean, give us a little sense of who we're talking to today. It sounds like a great interview.
Again, you know, I think there's just so much rich history in the membership at Oakley Country Club as I get to know more people out here. And some of these guys are like, you know, they're like you don't know what they've done in their life. You just kind of treat them like a member and the guy who's working on his golf swing, and you kind of forget about the fact that they've got this whole other career outside of Oakley. So we've got a gentleman named Jack Bartley on the line today. He is a former Massachusetts State House rep from 87 to 91.
Oh, wow.
He's been a lobbyist in town on Beacon Hill. He's got his own firm that he's been working with, and he's got a great history of people that he's known. Jack, I really appreciate you coming on board and look forward to talking to you today.
Thank you, Sean. I look forward to chatting with you and T-Mac.
So, Jack, you know, we'll kind of go forward, meaning we'll start with the career and then we'll kind of move into sort of some of the services that you've done at Oakley and sort of some of the positions. I think it's just good insight for all of our listeners, let alone our Oakley member listeners, to kind of hear what you've done. And I think that's an important thing, but maybe give us a little recap of sort of what you've done professionally and maybe even some of the people that you've had a chance to meet throughout your time.
Sure. I've had the distinct pleasure of having my entire professional career on Beacon Hill in downtown Boston, in and around the State House. Started as a legislative aide right out of college, went to law school nights, became a legal counsel to a committee. And then in 1984, I was involved in a legislative fight for House Speaker. And I was just this young punk, who was active in writing campaigns. And, I was working during the day and going to law school. And then I also helped out on this campaign. And in 1985, my candidate, George Kavarian, prevailed. And they asked me what I wanted to do. And I had just passed the bar. And I said, I'd like to be legal counsel to the speaker.
Wow.
So I was fortunate enough to be the youngest legal counsel to the speaker, and really had an incredible opportunity for a couple years in that capacity. Yeah. And then the state rep who I worked with as a legislative aide chose not to run, and I ran and was successful a state representative from Watertown. Where Oakley's located, and served in that capacity for 4 years, active on the healthcare committee and a committee dealing with gaming and utilities. Okay. And then in 1990-91, I lost an election, and I've been doing government affairs ever since. So it's been fun. I no 2 days are the same.
That's great. So...
So Sean T-Mac, I say that I'm like, as a lobbyist, I'm like the circus act that I have, 10 plates spinning all the time with different clients, and you just try to keep them spinning.
Yeah. Sure.
And if you can't do that, they'll find someone else who will.
Oh, wow. It's a lot of the deal right there is just kind of being able to be flexible, right? I mean, it's part of our job,
exactly.
T-Mac, when we talk about being golf professionals.
Absolutely.
And kind of sort of some of the different things that we encompass. I love what Jack just said, that we know 2 days are the same, right? That's why we teach. That's why we work at the golf course. That's why we run tournaments, merchandising. It's just such a fun industry to be in. But to hear about it from a really career-oriented person who's done it, and you've probably affected a lot of change in the Massachusetts state. And then has there been like some, I imagine you've kind of run across some different politicians that you've, like, seen throughout the years too?
Yeah, I have on my desk a photo of myself and with Mike Dukakis.
Oh,
And
wow.
when he was governor and was running for president, and Dukakis was holding my son, who's now 36, and my son had a Dukakis for president button. So that, you know what I mean? It's just
That's
that
funny.
was that was that was kind of cool.
Yep.
Another cool event was well, unfortunate event, but I chaperoned Dan Quayle for the Ted Kennedy's funeral,
Wow. Okay.
which was back in 2009. And just
Okay.
in that funeral, because I was able to sit right adjacent to him in the aisle, I met President Bush 43, Carter, President Carter, President Clinton,
Wow.
VP Al Gore, and that's when President Obama was president. I didn't get to talk to him, but he walked right by me. So I thought that was a cool event.
Oh my
Wow.
gosh. Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's
A
pretty
little
cool
different,
right there.
than our golfer people. Yeah,
Yeah.
exactly.
Just as a quick aside, so vice presidents don't get Secret Service. So it was one of those that I had a friend who had worked for Quayle at doing advance when he was in the White House and called me from Arizona and said, "Hey, can you help him out?" And I said, "Sure." And so, I had to pick him up from the Ritz and drive him to the funeral, which was at in Mission Hill, at the Mission Hill Church. It was a beautiful church.
Okay.
I got my car in New York Times because at the time I was driving a Porsche Cayenne Turbo.
Ooh, wow.
And they said Dan Quayle showed up in a Porsche,
I can
and I
see
had
you. I can see you running that car. That doesn't surprise me about you.
I had Steve I had a hankering that I was going to be able to get in, but I needed someone to park the car, so I called at 6 o'clock that morning Steve Messina, who was a member. And I said, "Hey, Steve, you want to meet Dan Quayle?" He goes, "Yeah." I said, "All right, put on a suit. I'll be at your house in 30 minutes." And
Oh, that's good. That's good
yeah,
stuff.
so yeah, that was a good event.
Great, great. So, Jack, can you share some memorable golf-related stories of your time as a state representative, highlighting the connections between politics and sports?
Yeah, good question, T-Mac. I've had the opportunity, I've been blessed. We're both on the elected side or even lobbying side to be invited. In Massachusetts, you cannot lobbyists cannot give anything of value. So the days of playing golf and and the like, it happened when I was a probably senior staffer in the beginning of my career as a state rep. But right now, you can't do it. So as a lobbyist, I can't take a state representative, a state senator out. But as a lobbyist, I can attend, some events. And, like the one that comes to mind is the RFK Jr., which was Ted Kennedy's brother, not the HHS secretary. He would have a tournament every year down in Hyannisport, and it was a celebrity pro-am. And I remember I played with Bill Russell. That was very memorable.
Oh, wow. That's
Now,
pretty cool.
you guys would probably remember the he had those, what were those called, Henry Griffiths?
Yeah, the long ones. They made it
Yeah, so I think
custom
that was
made
the first
for.
generation of clubs.
Yeah. Yeah.
I just think
It's so heavy, Jack. I don't know if you remember that. They're so heavy. They're picking one up because they were just trying to figure out custom building
yeah.
for clubs, and Russell's 6'11" or 6'9" or whatever he was, and
Yeah.
I can just see that happening to somebody like that. But they just had they had the weight wrong. T-Mac, you remember those clubs? You're too young for those
No, I'm too young. I
clubs.
don't know which ones those are right there. So I'm drawing a blank on that, guys, but it sounds like a heavy club.
It was just a custom. They were one of the first custom fit companies, so they really kind of targeted the taller guys.
Okay.
But they never really got the shaft right. In my head, it was always like a so D2 is a normal swing weight for irons type of thing. These things were like F2 T-Mac. These things were heavy.
Holy cow.
But yeah, Anyways, it's funny. It's funny, Jack. It's cool.
Yeah.
I had a chance to play high in a sport about a month and a half ago, and I had never played it before. I'm sure you've been there a few times, but it's a beautiful, beautiful piece of property. And the Kennedy compound, TMAC, is like literally across the water from number 17 tee box.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, it's a gorgeous place. Did you play there? You played there a few times, Jack?
I have been, and during the tournament, the time that I played with Russell, we were invited to the compound, the Kennedy compound at Ethel's house.
Oh.
And I remember going into to the bathroom, and there were all, you have photos of family members, and it's like,
Oh.
wow. And I remember looking at the phone, and the phone had Arnold Schwarzenegger, because again, I'm dating myself now. You know what I mean? I could point, I could just, push a button and talk to Arnold if I wanted to. It was that was kind of cool, but yeah, I met
Pretty good for a kid from Watertown, huh?
Wow, that's
absolutely.
amazing.
I got a photo with Bill Murray, Richard Kind,
Wow.
who's from Curb
Your
Your
jam?
Enthusiasm.
Yep,
So
yep.
those are some of the special times that you're
Right.
able to use your profession or your connections, if you will.
That's
Yeah.
wonderful.
Oh, that's such good stuff. Hey, I'm going to transition here a little bit because I told Jack T-Mac when I got him, when we were talking about this, I said we could have him on three times because he's got so many cool stories and interesting things. But for the point of what we're trying to do today, I think it's important. This is such a pivotal part of the golf course. So, Jack, I know you were president at Oakley during COVID, and then that little success, right? You don't just start off being president and serve as a probably secretary on the board. Really expound on what COVID, Oakley, golf, sort of some of the things you get to kind of make provision for. Such an odd time to golf, and I was only 5 years ago, which is really cool.
Sean, yeah, a great question. It was, when you work your way up and know you're going to be president, you're only president at Oakley for 2 years. You have some great ideas, things that you want to do.
Right.
And Oakley had just finished its beautiful renovations of its clubhouse. Everything was going on really well. And then in March of 2020, Governor Baker declares a state of emergency, only non-essential businesses. Everything was closed. Restaurants was closed, as we know it. And I'm like, what am I gonna do? And so, as president, you gotta show, the buck stops with you. You have employees, you have golfers, you have members who are owners, and I had to do simple things such as like going to Staples and getting a sign saying closed due to COVID, and post that all around the exterior of the course, and have cones and put cones up, and spending just going up in the afternoon and saying, hey, you can't be there. So those first few months were scary because you didn't know what was going to happen. Financially, it was tough. And our governor, Governor Baker at the time, he wasn't a golfer, and you would, right? I mean, you look now going,
Shut it down. He just shut it down. It's so different because we're in Florida, Jack. Me and T-Mac are in Florida, and Santa, or he just does he just does such a different take on it. It was just different in Florida versus Nassau or all of New England except for Connecticut, basically, right?
Yes, we great point, because I remember driving down with Jim Conroy, a fellow member. We'd play Connecticut all the time because Jim's from Connecticut, so he knew all the courses, and that's where we were driving. There were no problems there, but Governor Baker was clearly different and looked at it different, and but that was in March, and then it wasn't until May that they, late May, that they slowly allowed the course to open. But you had to wait 15 minutes out in front, right? Before your tee time, you couldn't gather, no gathering. And then before or after, they had those silly things in the cup. So, you had great scores because
Oh,
yeah.
I forgot about
And
that.
as Coach Sean will tell you, I loved it because there were no rakes and bunkers, and so like bunker play was kind of like secondary, you know. It was tough. But Oakley, you know, we did some things. The board met like every other week. Because our building was just renovated, we had a brand new HVAC system, so we were a test case. We were a beta case, and so we had ultraviolet lights technology that was that would kill everything from the common cold to the
Coronavirus?
COVID virus. Yeah. And so when we finally were able to open, the members felt comfortable because Oakley was a cleaner and in a safe environment for them to go to.
Interesting.
Wow.
Yeah. See, Mac, what were you doing during COVID year or during that summer?
I think I was working under you for part of it, and then I think I took on the GM role right after you left. And it was it for down here, it was definitely the wild, wild west. I mean, you know, people got angry too, you know. They didn't want to wait around, they didn't want to share carts, you know. A lot of and I think a lot of that just came from what Jack said was fear of the unknown. What were people going to do? What was this going to do? And a lot of people were, you know, but it gave a great outlet for people, especially our seniors down here, to get out and be mobile and do things instead of being shut up in the house where it's not very healthy.
No, I'm sure you had part of this too, Jack. It's so without offending every Oakland member that I know, part of my tagline is that golfers are dumb. And it doesn't mean, you know, it's just from my perspective as far as a golf professional throughout 30 years, if you just start with a little bit of that throughout your day, you kind of take some of the things that happen throughout the day a little bit better. And all I'm saying is the reason I even bring that up is that one of my biggest memories of COVID, February, March, we get a lot of people down in Tampa coming off the cruise ships, Jack. Right? And so they're the seniors, they've already scheduled their trip. They're coming off the cruise ships. They did shut that down, obviously, the middle of March down in Florida. But the point is, like, we had the dividers set up in the bar area and the pro shop area to protect the employees, not only to protect the customers, you know, from coming in. And it's just so funny how many times they would just like talk to you around the divider, like to the side of it, and try to give you the money. And like, what are you doing? Like, this is to protect the 20-year-old employee, let alone the 75-year-old, you know, customer in front of you. Like, it was just such a. My brother worked in Connecticut. Probably you might have gone out and played his course, Jack, in Conroy. But he did it the Chinese food takeout style way, right? He had a window in the pro shop. Nobody's allowed in the pro shop. You got porta potties outside. There's nobody coming in, and that's just the way it was. And you took your money and you sanitized the carts when they got done. And just such a. It's only 5 years ago. It feels like it's 30 years ago. But
And members, you know, our members are owners. And so I distinctly remember coming up to Mac on our 15th hole and looking in the parking lot, and, you know, the trunks are open and guys are all hanging together drinking beers. I had to yell at him. You know, I'm yelling at him like, you know, I'm using some strong language, just saying, what are you doing? Hide. You know, just don't do it in the open because, you know, the Oakley parking lot can be seen by the police very easily. Go hide. You know, I don't mind you drinking, but just you can't do it here because we have a liquor license. You're killing me.
No. And think about the police in general and all the things, firefighters that they had to go through just to, because every place that, you know, had something like that happen. It's crazy. Let's go positive. Let's go more positive note. Give me some of the legacy of Jack Bartley, some of the things that you were able to, you know, kind of create, institute. I know a couple of them, but you know, you talk what you want to talk about. But I think the Ross Library is just
The Ross
maybe a
Library.
pinnacle.
You know, I was, as I said, I was fortunate. I've been on the board, you know, probably 10 plus years before I was president, and I was like the first. I brought the committee, the historic committee, and I followed after a fellow named Dan Shea, which was like really our first historian, and we had a Ross Library in the new building, and Unfortunately, T-Mac, we had a fire in the 60s that destroyed our Bullfinch redesigned gorgeous clubhouse. But with that, all our antiquities went, our records, everything went.
Man.
And so I it was a sport. I used the internet and would, use search engines and buy trophies from, all over the country.
Yeah.
You know, people's estates, and was able to cobble together a trophy case of trophies given out during the Ross era. And those trophies, I will tell you, some of them were just magnificent. So that was one. In addition to that, thanks to the internet, I was able to put together some really museum pieces, some displays of Donald Ross. You think about this, and it wasn't until I tried it, I was able to get his official passage from Liverpool in March of 1899.
Wow.
I was able to get the census, right? Because the census grabbed everybody. So I was able to grab the census of 1900, where I was able to cut and paste just, the street where he lived. And he was there with about 10 other people. And it was a rooming house.
Okay.
And that's where he was. And then the last one I was able to get was 1910, when he was married, and he just had Lillian, his daughter, who was just a few months old. And I was able to put that together with a photo with him and with Donald and his brother Alex. And what was nice is that Lillian was able to see that when she came visit during our centennial. So those are some of the special things that I was able to do, during my short tenure. But I'm pretty proud of it. Dan Mee, who was the historian after me, and has taken it to the next level and then some.
Wow, that's amazing. I mean, just to. You know, the rich history that you guys have there with Donald Ross and how much you guys celebrate the architect is amazing. He's just an architect that's found around the world, from Australia to England. Just an amazing gentleman and story. So it's amazing that you guys have put that all together. That's good work right there. Great job.
Thank you. One of the first weeks that Sean was at Oakley, I asked him, I said, "Hey, have you been to the Ross Library?" Yeah. You know, let me tell you. So I really enjoy showing it off, if you will.
Oh, it's amazing. And the new design, we're going to have something similar, Jack. I know it's kind of toward the clubhouse so far. Again, listeners, obviously, in the fire December 6th, which is only a year ago, 2 days, a year and 2 days ago, which is crazy. But they've kept, because I remember a lot of these artifacts being in the ballroom right there, Jack, where they were we were just trying to dry them out, right? Let them.
Yeah, I'm curious to find out what happened to the Otis in the Otis room.
Okay.
T-Mac, we had a table
mm-hmm.
that was what they call a live edge table from a tree that the original owner of the clubhouse was Otis, and he had this beech tree, which was given to him as a gift from a friend from, I believe it was Georgia. And unfortunately, with the renovation of the clubhouse and the age of the tree, it just outlived its life. But when they were cutting it down, I asked the fellow, I said, "Hey, I'd like to have a, 8-foot slab." He goes, "What do you mean?" I said, "I'd like to, I'm going to send it to have it dried out, and made into boards." And the fellow says, "I can do that." And I said, "You're hired." it was just one of those, thoughts at the time, And I forgot about it. And he called me like 2 years later and says, "Your wood's ready."
Oh, wow.
And we have a member, Paul Glynn, who is just a high-end woodworker. And he does custom cabinetry. And he took a look at it and was able to select the best pieces and put two like 7-foot pieces together, so and made a magnificent table. that we have in the in the Otis private dining room.
Oh wow, what a bunch of rich history right there, you know, converting one thing and making it into another and keeping that legacy going. That's amazing. That's really good thinking right there. That's cool.
Thank you.
All right. Now we got to get to Jack's golf game, T-Mac.
Okay, let's.
I don't know if we have enough time to, you know, cover this one right here. He's one of my members, one of my guys who I don't mind seeing his text at 11 o'clock at night because I know he's researching something on Instagram or
gotcha.
Facebook or something, and he's got some new thought that he's working on, or he's like taking video of his swing. I love how he reports back to me about his game.
Mm.
About his rounds and stuff. I think that's such a good thing to have between a coach and a player.
Absolutely.
Jack, you know, again, it's only been a year and a half, but kind of give me some of the just initial feedback. And I'm not looking for any pat on the back, but I just wanted to maybe know, like, our relationship as a coach teacher and sort of like how you feel like you progressed over the last year or not progressed, by the way, too.
Yeah.
No, Sean, it's been great. I've gone from a coach, a pupil to a friendship at the same time, which has been really special and rewarding. But I know what's the phrase, T-Mac, about insanity? You know, you just keep doing the same thing over and over. And so what I've tried to do is like, okay, understand the golf swing, understand my golf swing, you know, and what I'm doing right, or more importantly, what I'm doing wrong. And what I've gained from working with Sean is that I'm a visual learner.
Mm.
And so if you can tell me something, okay. But when I see it, it's a different story. And so we're working both inside and outside with Sean, you know, the inside is, you know, with the various technology like TrackMan, I'm able to see what I'm doing. I'm going, oh,
yeah.
Oh, you know, it's just like, oh, I'm really swinging that, you know. And you, both of you know that, you know, where a golfer, you know, you say, oh, I'm improved, you know, oh yeah, I'm much better. When you probably shorten your swing, you know, 2 inches or 3 inches, and
yeah.
you think it's like 3 feet.
Yeah.
So what we think we're doing and what we do are so different on video, right?
Yes.
That's it is.
A big thing. We, a lot of CMAC does too. It's such an important piece because I almost feel like, sorry to hold you back there for a second, but just, I feel like as an instructor, the people want the information so quickly, and I'm trying to take video of their swing because I don't want to give you the information. I want you guys to see it first because then you'll believe it, right? Again, Jack, just like you said, if I tell you, hey, Jack, your swing's past parallel, right elbow's a little bit too deep
yeah.
and you're too far past. Yeah, Sean, I think it's okay. I'm hitting the ball good. I can still shoot 82. Okay, great. But here, and then you show the video, you're like, oh, that's not how Scottie Scheffler or Hideki Matsuyama, or that's
yeah.
not how they look.
Yeah, yeah. And I think you bring up a really good point about being a visual learner. Now with great things like TrackMan and all that, it just, I think it brings the learning process to people like us who are visual learners to the forefront. You know, the video technology that we're able to have and the visuals that we're able to, I just see that kids and students are learning so much quicker now than what they did before. But Sean is absolutely right. People want the whole product and not the learning process. And I think you got to tell your students it's about learning something new and enjoying learning something new. Learning a new skill set, but Sean's right. People get on into the thing and they want to know it right away. They want to know all the answers and it takes time. It's like learning anything else. You got to do step by step. So.
And T-Mac, that's a great point. I it'll play like 3 days a week, but I'll practice the other days.
Mm-hmm.
And I've really tried to work on a short game to the degree that when you've done it so many times, you feel confident, you know, and even
yeah.
at Oakley, I'll go out at night and I'll remember that chip that I didn't do well. And I'll come back and I'll, you know, I'm all by myself and no one's around and I'll hit 6 or 7 balls at the same place and move it around. You know, maybe I'm not supposed to do that, but I do. And the next time I'm out there and the ball's at the same place, I go, oh, I've been here. I know how to do this.
Absolutely.
Okay. That's so good right there. He doesn't even know, T-Mac, how good that is.
Yeah.
That's how good.
That's so great. And I love that he's moving the ball around. And I love that. You know, you've got to get different perspectives out there and different lies and gain that confidence and draw on those shots that you hit before, you know, those good ones, and draw on those shots and say, I can do this.
Yeah.
Because at Oakley, there in particular, we have high grass, rough right after the green in certain places, like on the 18th hole, you know, the ball, you know, he runs through. And if you don't have confidence in that shot, you're dead. But if you have confidence, it's a different story. You know, all of a sudden I'm smiling and they're looking at me like, well, I go, oh, I got this, you know, and you can hit it to, you know, if you hit it to 3 feet and you know, you give yourself a chance.
Absolutely.
How's the putter been, Jack? Did you switch to a lab last year or how long ago?
Yeah, I was an early adopter. I switched to a lab. You know, like all golfers, you go to, the various big shop PGA store or Golf Galaxy, one of those, and you just practice putting. And I was practicing with the lab putter, and I was like, you got to be kidding me! I was hitting like 8 in a row, and I was convinced at T-Mac that they had like little grooves, so the ball would go. So I went to another store, and I remember I hit like 2, you know, 8-footers, and I go, damn. And the guy looks at me and goes, what's the matter? I go, this is good. I got to buy this. And he says, yeah, I would.
Yeah. I think it's amazing that you talk about the lab putters. I just read an article lately how back in the early 2000s, everybody was playing a blade. And now if you look at all the top players, Rory and Scotty, they're all and even, you know, people like JJ Spahn, they're playing mallet putters or lab putters. And the traditional looking putter of the blade has slowly started going away. And now you're starting to see the implementation of more of the mallet style putters being utilized.
And the other point is that, you know, I've become friendly with a fellow who has a custom cool clubs. And Glenn, you know, he'll, like the old days when you go into a pro shop and you'd have racks and racks of clubs and you'd buy them right off the rack. I mean, nowadays I've been told that, you know, 80% of the club is the shaft. And you know, you can go to those places. You've done it, and you know they have hundreds of shafts, and you try different ones, and they try to get the best one to have the smallest dispersion. I mean, that technology is just, you know, it's just new, and it's great to embrace.
Yes, yes.
I think so. T Mac and Jack, like the putter thing, let's just kind of hold on that for a second, because the putter thing is so obviously it's, what, maybe 35 to 45% of your strokes type of thing. Like you just start with that baseline that if we're going to shoot 80 and we're probably going to have 30 putts, hopefully, you know, maybe 32, 33.
Yeah.
Your percentage that you use this golf club is so much more than any other golf club. And it's the same old tried and true thing. Like, oh, I'll spend $600 on a driver, but I'm not going to spend more than $100 on my putter.
Yeah.
Why?
Yeah.
What? Why? So then, but the analogy for me is, and I'm old enough, and T-Max, he likes to think he's young, but he's getting old. But like, like the drivers that we hit, Jack, I mean, we don't have to go back to like Persimmon and Laminated type of thing, but we can talk about even like Callaway Great Big Bertha or the TaylorMade, you know, Pittsburgh Persimmon driver. If you go back and look at those drivers from 20 years ago, the size of them, and then you compare it against the Callaway Elite, the Ping G440, the TaylorMade QI35, whatever you want to look at, just the size alone, and then bring that to the putter world. And that's the difference of like, blades were good for many years, and because people didn't know, and Ping kept doing stuff and bringing stuff out. But even Ping, some of those designs that Ping had in the last kind of like around 1985, 1990, they started making some different designs. And then there's a point of like, if I can miss hit a putt on the toe or the heel and the ball can go straight, that's what, you know.
That's what you're going for, right? So, you there on us, Sean?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Yeah, I would say on the lap putter, just quickly, TMAC, is that what I've found is just the role for me It's, you know, where I had, oh, Jack, your ball bounced after you hit it, you know, or you hit something. The role is really consistent, and that's what's helped me.
Do you find that forward press that, because I know Lab is known for that forward press and the grip. Do you find that really helps to get that roll, that ball rolling end over end for you?
It does. And I don't have to do a forward press. All I have to do is just, it's just a nice stroke, and it goes.
Yeah, that's an amazing piece of technology they put in that grip, and I'm surprised other companies haven't been doing that, or maybe they've got a patent on it still. But I think every company should, you know, I think, who is it? Whatever
Super
it is.
stroke, or
Yeah, Superstroke should be developing something like that. I think it's a great technology, personally.
I'm sure when you visit the 2026 PGA show in Orlando, you'll see a lot of them.
Yeah, I think
Yeah,
you're right.
I'm sure. If it's
Hey,
good, they copy it.
Jack, and again, listeners, we haven't like supplied information to Jack because I'm going to ask him a question, and I'm kind of looking for an answer, but I want to kind of see what he says. So, me and you talked about we go do a driver lesson. We're on the back of 17 green. We're kind of going towards the range. We're out there in maybe mid-March, mid-April, working on driver, and then you know, just T-Mac. I mean, flighting it high, bombing it like out to the right, kind of drawing back a little bit. And he's looking at me like, "This is it. This is all I got to do." And I'm like, "Yeah, you just got to extend your arms." Like, I don't know what we're doing with turtle arms on the way through. Let's just extend your arms. And then we go do another one, T-Mac, in the middle of like June. He's Sean, I can't hit my 7 wood, or I can't hit my 3 wood off the ground. I'm like, okay, so we go up to number 4. Same thing, T-Mac, just bombing these things out to the right, coming back. So, Jack, my point or my question realistically is like, isn't it like, how do you, as the player, how do you get back to those things before you do text me at 9 o'clock at night with your like, your death text of, oh my gosh, I've lost it, coach, how do I fix it?
I think we're like butterflies, you know, golfers. Our memory, you know, is very short-lived, and so you have a great round, and then you have a few weeks of great rounds, and then you forget what brought you there. You forget to extend the arm. You forget to have the 3 wood in the fairway more in the middle of your stance, and you know, and because of that. You know, for at least for me, I forget. And then fortunately I go back to your old your videos. I'm going, oh, you know, and you're the sensei, and you go grasshopper, you know. What I love about Sean is that he's honest. He's like, wait a minute, what are you doing? You know, what's going on? You know, there's no like, oh, you know, this is great. No, it's like, no, it's not great. What are you doing? Which is what we want.
Good.
Good
So,
stuff.
you know what I tell my students, Jack, is you know, students like that, I tell them after they get done with the lesson to write down some of the key notes that they had. I just find that human beings, about 30 minutes after a conversation, we forget about half of what we talked about. So I just think if you can write down a few notes or jot down a few things, those kind of help you with your swing thoughts when you're out there a little bit and get you back on track. That would be my suggestion.
Yeah, I still have my notes here next to
He's got a journal.
my
I know he does.
He's got a journal. I love it. That's great. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Tell us about how you were caddying back in the 60s and
Ooh,
sort
yeah.
of the youth development of that golf course. Pretty crazy.
I started as in the late mid to late 60s. You know, team, I thought I was going to have a widow something like age 13. You know, I'm carrying these big, they call them kangaroo bags, right, Sean? Right? And guys, you know, unlike today where Oakley members have a little bit more wealth, you would have these old leather bags that the strap was all cracked, you know, and dig it into your it's like, oh. And then you would open up, and at the time, this is a time of a lot of golf balls, and you know, a bad swing, man, you can cut one of those Titleists, and you know, they never got rid of them. They just put them in their bag, and you carry all this dead weight. But it was fun. There were a lot of caddies. It was a different type. It was a different era. Oakley didn't have, it just began the cot program, and the cots were three wheeled, and they had like a tiller as opposed to a steering wheel. So there were a lot of caddies, and you know, everyone had a caddy, and you know, so it's you'd get out, but there were like 30 or 40, and you know, the certain ones, you know, you work your way up into being an A caddy, and they would pay you by either by cash, it was $250, and they'd give you $5, or they would give you a card, and they'd sign it, and then on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock, you'd go up to the pro shop. And you'd cash in your cards, and to you know to get your cash.
No Venmo accounts at this point, is that right?
No
No
Venmo.
Zelle? No.
Now, did they let
And
you
we
play
look
the
at today.
course at all?
Yeah, Mondays we could play.
Oh, okay. Okay.
Monday, and we had a caddy program, a caddy a banquet in a golf tournament. I was never that good, but Mondays we you know. We would have the you know the starting the, those starter clubs, and it was always fun. But
That's
I
cool.
remember we had a driving range. In fact, Oakley is one of the first driving ranges in the country. It really really short, no more than 170 yards. But we would trying to T-Mac, we would for guys who would want to warm up before or after, they'd give you a batter's helmet, like a loose batter's helmet for baseball, and you have a shag bag, and you dump the shag bag off, and then you would go out in the middle of the practice range, and the golfers would aim at you and shoot at you.
That's awesome.
Off of 50 cents.
Oh man. Oh
I
man.
know.
Holy cow.
It but it gave me a good work ethic, I'll tell you that. You know, caddying has brought that, did bring that, you know, and I made sure my sons caddied. I have two sons, and they both caddied, and I think it instills a good work ethic in an individual.
And just a way to obviously be able to interact with older adults, right? That's one of the things that I had not been used to in my other career previous to Oakley, but working for Scott and how much he's embraced that program throughout his time there, and then how much the members have embraced, you know, the continuation of that program. I just think we don't see it in Florida because of the heat. We don't really see that too often. There's some high-end courses, Old Memorial and maybe Lone Palm, that do have caddies, but they're more of like the professional caddies. They're not the kids that we're talking about from the Caddyshack movie, you know, that you kind of envision in T-Mac coming up in the April vacation, coming up in 2026. We'll be the Caddyshack movie thing where the kids come out and they, you know, they're dressed poorly and they're whatever, but you kind of groom them, and that might have been Jack Bartley, you know, 50 years ago, whatever. I don't know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it was. Our sister clubs have you know those caddies, those more professional caddies that you know come up that migrate up from the south. But we get 13-year-old, 14-year-old kids that are bag handlers. You know, they really just hold
That's
bags.
it. That's
But
it.
we do have a probably a handful and many of them are members children who you know are quite good in a good golfers and a good caddies.
The last part too, I'll say about that too, is that with the WeMet scholarship, with the fact that again Scott has done such a good job of embracing that, and it's supported by the club, T-Mac. That's the biggest thing, is that there's donations made by the members to the WeMet scholarship. So these kids that we're talking about that are 13, 14 years old, Chris McGuire is probably the best example that I know of, and I've only been there 2 years, but he was the kid who started off in the bag room, you know, and now he's a successful, you know, individual junior member at Oakley. And that's, again, it's kind of the Jack Bartley from, you know, 4 years ago type of thing. But you do see the progression of some, and boys and girls, by the way, there's some girls that have come along too that have worked for Scott. And it's such a good, you know, historical part of the program, keeps the tradition going. And it's just, yeah, it's good on many different fronts, so.
I think it's an amazing story. A young man that's a caddy at the club, you know, now has become a member, a leading member, a president of that club. I mean, it's just, you know, that is what golf brings to everybody. I think that's where we all miss it, is that, you know, here's a story of a young man that was a caddy pulling himself up by the bootstraps. Mm-hmm. And now he's been a member of Oakley for a number of years, a president. You know, it just doesn't get any better than that as far as stories go for membership there at Oakley. And that's something I think the Oakley membership should really hang their hat on and be proud about, is that they've got people that are caddies or other parts of it. And they love the place so much that they're willing to sacrifice their time to be part of that community. And they're willing to go outside and above to find things of historical value for that club. I think it's an amazing story, and I think everybody there at Oakley should be very proud of what Jack's done for him. That's great.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, T-Mac. That's very kind of you.
So,
hey, really, really good having you on, Jack. I appreciate you coming on board, and look forward to 2026 and keep working with you. And I think this has been great for our listeners to hear. So just from our side, thanks for coming on and keep going, right? Keep getting better.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I look forward to a great 2026.
Good.
Sounds good, sir. Thanks for coming on, Jack.
Yeah, thank you, Jack.
My pleasure.
Certainly appreciate it. Once again, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our Dynamic Podcast listeners. Thank you so much for tuning in and listening. And we also want to thank Jack Bartley for what he's able to bring to the conversation. Thank you so much, Jack. We certainly appreciate it. And once again, if you guys have any questions and want to get a hold of us, you can reach us at dynamicpodcast.org, or you can reach Sean at the Pro Shop there at Oakley Country Club, or you can reach myself at swingtheorygolf.com. If you guys have any questions, as I said, please feel free to reach out. And if you guys have any subjects or topics that you want us to cover, please let us know. Once again, thank you.